This is week three of our series called The Exodus. And we are studying the story of the journey out of Egypt into the Promised Land, and we are learning lessons about that journey, about that story, so that we can, as we move from here to a new location, learn from their mistakes, but also build and leverage on their right decisions, on their wisdom. I want to fast forward in time with you over chapter 2 all the way to about chapter 5 towards the end of the chapter, so that we can continue this journey. Let me catch you up if you haven't been here before. The nation of Israel found its way into Egypt through Joseph. That generation died. A new generation of Israelites emerged. They become very numerous, populate the land. They become so numerous that the Pharaoh in charge during that time is very concerned about them. He oppresses them with hard labor. He makes them slaves in Egypt. He also sets in this order or edict that says every male child born in Egypt that are Hebrew male-born children should be killed at birth, or they should be thrown into the Nile River. It's very barbaric, but he issues this order. And then something miraculous happens. A Hebrew man and his wife have a child together. She gives birth to the child, and for 3 months, because they are fearful of this child being killed because of the edict or order that was issued by Pharaoh, they hide him. And so for 3 months, this child is hidden from the public, and they do everything they can to hide this child. But just as life happens, this child grows to the level where it cannot be hidden any longer. The mother, out of desperation, puts this child in a basket, wraps this basket in tar so that it will float, so that it will be waterproof, and she sends this basket down the Nile River. The basket ends up landing or stopping at a place where Pharaoh's daughter bathed on a regular basis. And one day as she was bathing, she recognizes this basket in the weeds. She goes over to the basket and she opens the basket and she sees that there is a child inside. She is so moved by what she has found, she rushes to get some Hebrew women's help in raising this child. And lo and behold, as fate would have it, this child's mother is the one that is chosen to help nurse this child in its infancy. Pharaoh's daughter eventually ends up adopting this baby, and she names him Moses. Moses means to draw out. Moses is raised in Pharaoh's house, and he grows up in Pharaoh's house, experiencing all the luxuries, all the benefits of someone under his reign. After a period of time, Moses understands and knows that he is a part of the Hebrew people. He understands his heritage. And on one specific day, Moses is watching the work and the oppressive labor that's taking place within the nation of Israel. And he recognizes and he sees this one Egyptian man beating this Hebrew slave. And Moses becomes enraged. He believes no one is watching at this moment, but Moses goes and he kills this Egyptian for beating this Hebrew slave. The next day, Moses is out with these Hebrew people again, and a fight breaks out among the Hebrews, and Moses tries to step in and help the situation, and one of the Hebrews speaks up and said, "Are you going to kill us as well?" In that moment, Moses realizes and understands that this murder that's taken place that he caused was not hidden. As a matter of fact, word eventually gets back to Pharaoh that Moses had killed an Egyptian. Pharaoh sets out at this point to kill Moses because of what he has done, and it caused Moses to have to flee to a city called Midian. And in Midian, Moses meets his wife, Zipporah. And Moses moves in with his family, or his in-laws, which is always an interesting event. I've moved in with my in-laws, and it's just wonderful. It's great. My in-laws are absolutely great. They really are. They're awesome. Moses moves in with his in-laws, and Moses gets a job working in his father-in-law's shepherding business. And Moses is a shepherd for a period of time, and on one specific day, he has led his flock to the far side of the desert. And when he is there, he sees up on a hillside a bush burning. The amazing thing about this bush is that it does not burn up. It continues to burn without burning the bush up. And as any normal human being would do, Moses goes over to inspect why this bush is burning without it being burnt up or consumed. And in this moment, Moses has a life-transforming experience with God. For out of the voice comes, or out of the bush comes this voice, and speaks to Moses about his destiny. Moses, you're the one I want to use to lead the children of Israel, the Hebrew people, out of Egypt into the land I promised to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Now, Moses does what most people do when they hear that clearly from God. They begin to make excuses as to why God has the wrong person picked. The excuses go on and on and on, so long so that God eventually becomes very upset with Moses and eventually allows Aaron to be a companion of Moses to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt into the promised land. God gives Moses and Aaron a specific objective to accomplish. Now, the Pharaoh that was in charge when Moses left Egypt has now died. And there's a new Pharaoh reigning over Egypt at this point. And Moses and Aaron are instructed to go to this new Pharaoh and tell this new Pharaoh a very famous line many of us have probably heard before: "Let my people go." So Moses and Aaron do exactly what God has asked them to do. They go before Pharaoh and they say to Pharaoh this famous line: "Pharaoh, God has said, let my people go." Now, Pharaoh has no respect for Moses as God at all, and little respect probably for Moses. Instead of Pharaoh letting the children of Israel go, he raises the intensity of the burden placed upon them. Now, follow me. There's the initial burden of hard labor. Then there is this order that all the male children born should die. Now he's going to raise the stakes even higher. Pharaoh doesn't let the children of Israel go. He issues an order to the Egyptian slave masters, those in charge of these Hebrew slaves, to stop providing straw for the Hebrew people. But that the quota of bricks they are in charge of making every single day should not change. So now the Hebrew people are in charge of going and gathering all the straw to make the bricks and making the bricks all in a day's work, which was near impossible for them. They were working long, long hours. They were miserably burdened by very hard labor. Can we all just agree this morning that at this point in the storyline, the people are incredibly frustrated? Is that fair? They are heavy burdened. They are miserably frustrated, and anytime you become miserably frustrated and heavy burdened, you're looking for someone's head to roll. Anyone ever been there before? Like, I'm tired of my current circumstances. Who's to blame? I need to blame somebody right now so that this can be fixed. And so, something interesting happens in Scripture. Look with me in Exodus chapter 5, verse 19. The Israelite foremen, those in charge of the slaves from the Hebrew side of things, realized that they were in trouble when they were told, "You are not to reduce the number of bricks required of you for each day." When they left Pharaoh, they found Moses, of course they did, and Aaron waiting to meet them. And they said, "May the Lord look upon you and judge you." Now, this is a Hebrew curse. It is, you have been judged by us as incompetent and unfit to lead. You have made us a stench to Pharaoh and his officials and have put a sword in their hand to kill us. Now, these verses illustrate to us a very important point that everyone in this room today really needs to hear. Chapters 2 through the end of chapter 5 have incredible principles. Many of them we've already dealt with in the God of the Underdog series. And I'm not going to rehash them today. But there's one principle that I want us to grab a hold of today that comes alive in about verse 19 and 20 and then to the end of the chapter. And here's the principle if you're writing things down. Obedience with preferred outcomes doesn't always happen. Let me say it again. Obedience with preferred outcomes doesn't always happen, at least not in the short term. Follow me for a moment. Moses and Aaron hear God. Go tell Pharaoh, let my people go. They go tell Pharaoh, let my people go. I'm guessing that Moses and Aaron in this moment are like, all right, watch what's getting ready to happen. This is going to be amazing. But nothing amazing happens. As a matter of fact, things get worse, way worse. I'm just trying to get in the mind of Moses and Aaron for just a moment. Because they're standing before the people called the Israelites, the Hebrew people, and they are getting a tongue lashing for being obedient. Let me just stop here and see if we can make a point together. I don't know if any of you have been there before in a situation where you have felt like you heard clearly from God. Like you were clear on an issue and you were obedient to God, and then the results in your life didn't match the obedience. Like you did what God wanted you to do, but you did not see the results of that obedient act. Let me just tell you that in those moments, how many of you know that people are eager to tell you how foolish you were in making that decision? Something like this: you must not know Jesus very well. You must be far from God, because there's no way that you could have made that decision and received those circumstances after you were obedient. My guess is you'll probably burn in the darkest levels of hell because you made that decision. I mean, that's the way you feel. I'm not saying people actually say that. But afterwards, you're like, oh my gosh, am I like non-Christian now? Am I like not a believer because of the circumstances? That's what goes on in this journey. And so let's just talk about real life. This has happened to some of us. You don't take that promotion that pays more money because you felt like in your heart God said, don't take the promotion, stay where you're at. And then you fall on a difficult financial situation, and those who love you most, family or friends or even coworkers maybe, look at you and you go, you are an idiot. You were getting ready to make more money doing that job, and now you're in tough times. And so, what are you thinking? Or maybe you quit your current job to start a new business that you are convinced God has led you to start. You are moved in your heart to step out and go begin to live out this new business venture. And then the startup happens and it doesn't go the way that you want it to go. I mean, you're not profitable, you're struggling, you're sacrificing significantly, and everyone around you is saying this: you left a good job, good paying job, steady job, providing for your income to go do what? Maybe some of you, or maybe there's an individual in here that's moved halfway across the country to go launch into this new endeavor you know God's asked you to go do. You felt in your heart, go move here. And then you go move there and nothing significant happens. As a matter of fact, it seems like the wheels fall off when you arrive at the destination God had for you. You're like, everyone's going. So you left the comforts of home, family, friends, all this stability to go there, and that's the result. And they say to you, you definitely did not hear from God. As a matter of fact, you lost your mind. Come on. Maybe you break up with that girl or that boy that you know God's asking you to break up with. Like, you're convinced that's not the right relationship. And then you go on a 2-year drought where there are no prospects anywhere in sight for you to date. Like, you go to Match.com, ChristianMingle.com, because you got to be a Christian, all right? You got to mingle with Christians, right? Because all those other ones are heathen sites. So you go to Jesus site, ChristianMingle.com. and you mingle with Christians, but no one's mingling with you, and you're wondering, what's the deal? And maybe your friends and family are like, you had a good relationship before. She or he was wonderful. Maybe your parents fell in love with he or she that you felt like God said you shouldn't be with. And so your parents are like, see, dumb. Look at that. You had that girl, that boy all set for you, and you left him. Now look at you. You're destined for singleness the rest of your life. Or maybe God said to you, stay in that marriage relationship. And all your families and all your friends say, there's no reason to stay in that relationship. What are you doing? Don't you realize the devastation? Don't you realize the destruction? You have no business staying. And you stay because you felt like deep in your heart, God said stay, when everyone else around you thinks it's the worst decision. And by the way, it might get way worse. And you're in a situation where you made the decision to stay, and maybe it continues to digress rather than progress. And you're wondering, oh my gosh. And everyone else is looking at you saying, you don't get it. You have every right to leave. But inside, you know you should stay. Or maybe there's a college student in here and you've got this opportunity to go on a full ride scholarship or a partial ride scholarship. And God's saying to you, don't go to play that sport or play that instrument or carry that thing out for that scholarship. You don't go there. And your parents are like, it's free. Go. But in your heart, you know, I can't go. God said no. And then maybe for the next couple of months, you're in this kind of this land of unknown, this uncertainty, and you're wondering, oh my gosh, I said no to that great opportunity, but what in the world's next? Maybe your parents are like, you've been in my house too long. You're expensive. So we do what's right. We know God's asked us to do it, and the results don't line up with the obedience. And everyone is eager to tell us how off we are. I think as bad as it is to deal with the outside voices that begin to speak stuff into us that, quite honestly, oftentimes people just don't know what they're talking about. I mean, sometimes we blow it, but when we're obedient and people speak that stuff into us, it's really hard to filter through all that stuff. But I think worse than the outside voices is what happens internally to us. I want you to notice in the text what takes place next in the story. Moses and Aaron receive this verbal tongue lashing, and then the conversation gets serious between Moses and God. Moses returned to the Lord and said, "Oh Lord, why have you brought trouble upon this people? Is this why you sent me?" Is this why I went to Pharaoh? Did you bring me to this point just to make life worse on somebody else? Is this what this is about right now? I mean, ever since I went to Pharaoh to speak in your name, can I translate that for you? Ever since I did exactly what you asked me to do, he's brought trouble upon these people. I love this phrase. It's how we get. And you haven't done your part. You hadn't rescued a single person. You haven't changed the circumstances one bit. Now, maybe you're way more spiritual than I am, and that's very possible. But I can relate to Moses. Because I've walked the journey of making decisions that I knew God asked me to make, and there was not results to speak for it or to support it. And I have asked myself, and I have asked God, what are you doing? I mean, come on. Especially the individual in here. I mean, all of them relate, but let me just dive in a little deeper to the single person who gave up the relationship you knew God was asking you to give up. How many of you know that when you give up a stable relationship, you enter the world of insecurity, and insecurity, when it lasts 2 or 3 or 4 years, becomes depression? I told you this story before, but I dated a girl in high school. I thought that I was going to marry. Great girl. She's with another guy now. They're happily married. That's all great. But I went from steady relationship, who I thought I knew what God was going to do, to I know God asked me to leave this relationship, to 2 years of going, not a single relationship is working. AOL was a big hit when I was in college. I don't know where AOL's at anymore. I haven't seen them lately. But I searched through AOL. I looked at the prospects, the place that I was at in that period of time, and I was like, where are you at? Maybe you've been there. Maybe you're there right now. Why have you abandoned me? Why have you neglected me? Why did you ask me to do that? And then I see this is the result. What are you doing? And then something amazing happens. Chapter 6, verse 1. Then God speaks. He says to Moses, now, you're about to see what I can do. Now you will see what I will do. Can anyone in here just thank God that verse 6 or chapter 6, verse 1 is in the Bible? Come on. I mean, come on. If it ended at chapter 5, we'd be in trouble. I mean, you make no sense. I mean, we are obedient and this is what I get, but thank God for chapter 6, verse 1. Now you're about to see what God is about to do. And this morning we don't have time to unpack all that God is going to do because that's the whole series called the Exodus. But I'm telling you, God's about to do some stuff. I mean, there's some the hand of God business coming on the Egyptian people. You just got to understand that it got bad and it got worse, but it's about to get better. How many of you know that the darkest night is just before the dawn? That when things look the worst is when God steps in and says, all right, it's bad, I know, now watch. I mean, it's that moment in your personal journey where you didn't take that job or that promotion that God said, don't take. And then you begin to see, all right, that wasn't the promotional chain, but God had something totally different for you. And maybe he changes jobs, or maybe he provides another avenue for you to be involved in. And you begin to see, God saved me, even though it was bad, he saved me from a worse decision. Or maybe some of you who start your business or company, you leap out on faith and you start this company and there's nothing and there's nothing and there's nothing. And then all of a sudden that one account you land and it came from nowhere and you're like, whoa. And then you stop living in the land of depression that all of us get when we start companies, if you do that right, and you start realizing, oh my gosh, God brought that account to me and that network to me, and you begin to see all the potential on the horizon. 6 verse 1 comes your way. Now God begins to work. And that individual that's been desperately searching for a relationship for the last couple of years, can I just tell you that I lived in that world? And can I tell you that one day when I wasn't ready or looking for it, God said, hey, how about Jennifer Perrine? And when I mean one day, I mean literally one day, because the day in which God showed up in our lives, we weren't ready for it at all. I mean, it wasn't like teased around a little bit. It was like one day Jennifer was a friend and the next day, I mean, just like that. I mean, come on, that's the way God works. You look all these different places and then you get in this place and like, God, where are you at? And then God says, all right, here we go. He provides the relationship you never thought possible, and you begin to see God's hand work. You begin to know that God didn't really abandon you in the midst of that. Yes, it was bad, and yes, you struggled, and yes, it was tough, but 6-1 comes your way. Some of you right now, you're in marriage relationships, and God said, stay, He said, stay, and you're staying, and it's been bad, but I'm telling you, 6-1 can come your way as well. God, in a moment in time, can begin to change the hearts of those people involved in that relationship, and 6-1 comes your way. The hand of God begins to work in your marriage relationship, and it begins to blossom and grow, and it begins to be healed. And what happens in your relationship is you begin to see, oh my gosh, it was terrible what we went through, but it just might be that my relationship might be better after it. I can't tell you the number of people that have come to me and say, we went through the darkness of marital unfaithfulness and the darkness of all kinds of garbage in the marriage relationship, but after we let God heal us and we are so much better now than we ever were before the relationship. I mean, 6-1 hit their marriage relationship. Some college student who said no to the full ride or said no to the opportunity out there. And they're like, oh my gosh, God, why did you have me say no to that? Along comes God and presents this opportunity in front of you that's way better and way better aligned for your life. And you begin to see God didn't forget me. He was just realigning some things in my life. Listen, that's you for some of you today. And you know what's happening right now in this room? Hear me. Some of you right now, some of you, God's saying to you, now for you. Your 6-1 moment is not that far off. Now please understand, I'm not a prosperity preacher. Do you get that? I'm not saying that God, that everything works out exactly like we want. What I'm telling you, though, is that God is faithful to fulfill his covenant and come through on his promises. That's the reality. Now, let me tell you about my life for just a minute. Because I've been on this journey long enough to know that 6-1 comes when we're obedient to him in his time. 9 years ago, we started our church, and it was a great start, and it was all fun. And then 5 years into that, we realized we needed to move. And so in December of 2008, I told our leadership team in 2008, and by the way, I've told this story on several occasions, but it's worth repeating today for what we're talking about. I told the board, I said, guys, here's the deal. We're going to go buy that Walmart building. God has told me in no uncertain terms, we are to pursue the Walmart building. As certain as I was God called me to preach, as certain as I was God called me to start this church, I was equally as certain that God asked me to go pursue the Walmart building. I will go to my grave with that level of certainty, and so we pursued the Walmart building. And they said no. I don't know if you guys realize what our church did to get the Walmart building. I don't know how many of you were here in 2009 or so or 10 when we did this, but we marched around the Walmart building in Prattville. Is there anyone in here that can relate to me? Anyone in here march around the walls of Jericho with me, Walmart building? Anybody? Come on. Anybody? Like 3 people in this room did that. 5? Okay, we got a few hands. All right, 10 of you remember this. We marched around the Walmart building every day. I marched around the Walmart building every single day for months and months and months. And our church did it for a period of time as well. And that Walmart building had a section of land cut out. It was drug spoon. And I was so convinced God was going to give us the Walmart building that I walked around the edge perimeter of that whole entire Walmart building, but I did not take a step onto Spoon Drugs property because I didn't want God to give us that, because I just knew that wherever I walked, God was going to give us. And I didn't want to take Spoon Drug because that's Spoon Drug's place. So I would literally walk on the edge of the property like this on that line so that I could claim the area God said for me to go get. And then we offered a contract and they said no. I'm like, well, we'll teach you. We'll walk even more. So we walked harder. I walked all the time. I prayed up there. I was up there at 12 o'clock at night. I was begging Jesus. I was planning on this because I knew that God called us to do ministry in the Walmart building. Because that's where we do ministry, in a Walmart building. Because that's where it happens. And they said no. And we offered and they said no. And it came to a point where we realized, matter of fact, we didn't know all the details at the time, but they had made a deal with Research behind the scenes. They had kept it very quiet, and we were still asking them to rent us the facility, and they just said, no, we're done with you. We don't want any more offers. I looked up at God, and I said, what in the world are you doing? I stood before your people. I like to call you your people. I like to call you guys his people, and I feel like he's messed it up. You're my people. When things are going good. Come on. said, what are you doing? And they said no. And so I remember actually thinking that the homeland building was an opportunity for us. And so I remember thinking, because we always try to justify when things aren't going well, I began to think, well, maybe I just missed the building by a little bit. Maybe it was never the Walmart building. Maybe it was the homeland building. And so I began to walk around the homeland building. And it was never meant to be. And we pursued 32 acres of land, and we looked and looked and looked, and we reached a place where I was like, God, I have no idea what you're trying to do. I don't get this at all. And you know what? There was the church was incredibly gracious to me during that period of time. I thankfully didn't have to live out all of chapter 5 where the people came and just said, you need to resign. I'm thankful that didn't happen. You were gracious to me. But there were people said, you see, we probably made some mistakes along the way. Probably was never right building in the first place. And I had to listen to all that. And I thought, God, I don't know what you're doing. And then all of a sudden, 6-1 happened, where God said to an individual that I had talked with before that promised me it would never lower the price on a piece of property ever, that it was set in stone, that they knew what it was valued at and it would never change. God moved their hearts to drop a price from $600,000 to $350,000 in a moment of time. And so the opportunity came for us to buy the land that we're on, that we own now, and that we're building a building on now. Because when God begins to work and act, he shows up mightily and powerfully in ways that we could not have imagined or understood. Some of you are here right now, and you are living in chapter 5. You're living in the mess of it. You feel like God said for you to do something, and you're living in the mess of it, and God has not fulfilled his promise. And I'm saying to you today that if you're living in chapter 5, there is a chapter 6 coming. I said to you, I've already said this, I'm not a prosperity gospel preacher. I'm not saying that we give a certain amount and we just become rich overnight. What I am saying, though, is that I believe and preach the gospel, which is that Jesus shows us this picture that obedience to God doesn't always look good in the beginning, but Resurrection Sunday does come. And I'm telling you today that if you'll walk in obedience to him, we cannot control outcomes, but God is sovereignly above us controlling the outcomes of events. And when we surrender to him and we walk in obedience, that 6-1 does come in our lives. Your marriage will get better. 6-1 will come. Your business, if you're walking in obedience to God, will become all that God wants for it to become. I'm asking you today to walk with me in obedience to God, and we will begin to see the promises of his word come to life in our journey. Would you come with me on that journey? Today's not the day to faint or give up. Today's the day to wait on 6-1, because it's coming. Would you bow your heads and close your eyes today?